Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us online as well. For the folks that are here, I know that we are kind of the last thing standing between you and the party tonight, so we'll try to get this going and get you out of here on time. My name is Matt Mary. I'm a program manager in the Windows team. I work on the Windows runtime team, and I'm here with Suhail Khalid. He's a program manager on the networking team, and we're here to talk to you today about building great service-connected applications. Now, the first thing that comes to mind when I say service-connected applications is probably some of the really, really big names, the Amazons of the world, the eBays of the world, but there's an opportunity for everyone to get in on this. There are hundreds, there's thousands of great applications that customers use every day, the next Amazons, the next eBays of the world. And these are the service-connected apps, and these are the really, really great apps. They're the ones that are engaging, they're dynamic, they're social. They draw users back into them, and these are the ones that developers really want to write. The problem is it's not always easy to write these applications. This is my teammate, Harry. He's trying to write one of these apps. He's a little upset. But there's been challenges in writing these apps, and we kind of recognize that. And so what we're going to talk to you today about is some of those challenges in writing these applications, and we're going to do it by walking you through a sample application. Now, I think everybody probably caught the keynote on day one. There was a Supernova application. We're going to take that app. That's a service-connected app. It just pulls images from Flickr, shows them. And we're going to show how we can get that app connected. And we're going to show how we can solve some really interesting hard problems. And Suhail's going to walk us through that first half of that app. And then I'll come back for that second half and talk about how you can kind of take your service-connected application and really turn it into a great app. We can't cover everything within an hour, so we kind of zeroed in on these four things. And what these really represent, especially this first one, getting connected, that's kind of the bread and butter of building a service-connected app. You have to get connected. And there's been challenges in that space, and Suhail's going to talk to you about the improvements that we've made to make sure that you can easily get connected. And if you want the app to be personalized, if you actually want the app to, you know, reflect the user that's using the app, you're going to need to get authenticated. And authentication has not been easy. It's not been easy for developers, it's not been easy for customers, and we're going to talk about the improvements in that space as well. And of course, I'm pretty sure that everybody has seen some of the really great things that we've done with Azure Mobile Services. We're going to talk a little bit, we're going to get into a little bit more detail than you saw in the two keynotes on using Azure Mobile Services within your app and getting your own service up and running. And then finally, we're going to cover a really interesting problem for applications, and that's making sure that your applications are fresh and up to date with the latest and greatest content for your apps before your users even run them. So we'll jump right into this, and I'm going to hand it off to Suhail, and he's going to get us connected. Suhail?
Thanks, Matt. My name is Suhail Khalid. I'm a program manager in core networking, and I'll talk about the first part of building a connected app that's getting connected and getting authenticated. So let's jump right in. Now, when dealing with getting connected, apps have to use one of the foundational languages of the internet, HTTP. And using HTTP hasn't exactly been a joyride so far. If you're building a JavaScript app, you're using WinJS XHR, and you have no APIs to access or manipulate cookies. And you need that when working with a lot of web services. They use it for tracking, they use it for authentication, a whole boatload of reasons. Headers are tough as well, because they aren't type safe. And a lot of the top 500 web services, they actually have typos in common header responses. In fact, the famous typo of 1R as opposed to 2 in refer has lived in the RFC to date. And then finally, to build a fast and fluid app, developers today have to build their own cache. And that isn't exactly fun. So we addressed, we heard this feedback and addressed these problems in the new Windows Runtime HTTP client. This API solves all these issues and more. System.NET developers, you'll remember this HTTP client from .NET 4.5. And we, so caveat, we added more features, more juice to this API, like caching. And I'll show you that in our demo. So let's jump into Visual Studio and take a look at our app. Can we jump into Visual Studio, please? Oh, it's up. Sweet. So let's run this app right away. And you can see I'm using System.NET HTTP client. And you saw this app from, you saw Antoine demo this app in the keynote. And what this app is doing is it's connected to Flickr. It's pulling down beautiful images of supernovas and nebulas. And we're using the old System.NET HTTP client for that. So let's take a look at what we need to do to start using the new Windows runtime HTTP client. So let's jump back to Visual Studio. First, I'm going to change the namespace from system.net.http to Windows. Well, let's spell Windows, right? Windows.web.http. And then we'll scroll down to see our actual HTTP client code. Just like before, we're going to get a new HTTP client object. We've got our URL already set up to go get these images. And as you can see in the posters that we handed out outside, we've got support for the same great easy-to-use APIs, like get string async, get buffer async, get async. So for this app, actually, we don't have to do anything else other than change the namespace, and we're good to go. Let's run this and take a look. Everything still works. It's awesome. We can click on each image, see a larger view of it. So why this new HTTP client? I talked about caching. Let's take a look at what we need to do to use this cache. We can imagine offline scenarios. By running that app already using the new Windows runtime HTTP client, I've already got the cache hot. Now, because of this new API, you've got a cache for free. And you have APIs to access it. Let's take a look. So we're going to access our cache, we're going to use the base protocol filter in the HTTP base protocol filter class. And I'll get into what filters are all about in just a minute. So bear with me. And then we're going to actually change, we're going to access the read behavior of the cache. And we'll assign it to read only from cache. And finally, we're going to pass in this base protocol filter into our HTTP client. Now, to make this interesting, we're going to actually pull the plug. And I'm not connected to Wi-Fi or anything. And so we're going to pull straight from the cache. We can no longer make HTTP requests over the internet. I'm not connected. Did you see how fast that was? That's exactly the user experience we want our customers to have. These images were pulled straight from the cache. And this wasn't possible before with System.NET HTTP client. So use the new Windows Runtime HTTP client to get access to some of these great new features like cache. Can we jump back to the because we're building this app, this talk is about building connected apps, let's actually take out this caching code. Let's stop the app. And reconnect our network. This is a talk about building connected apps, after all. Can we jump back to the slides? Thank you. So you heard me talk about filters with cache. And you saw me use the let's go to the next slide. And you saw me use this HTTP-based protocol filter. Now, System.NET developers, this is familiar. This should look familiar to you. This is the same concept as HTTP handlers. But if you're new to this concept, just quickly, what it is that your request messages sent out by HTTP client are handled by filters along the way that you insert in this filter pipeline. These request messages are handled and manipulated by filters along the way before it gets sent out to a web service. And similarly, these responses go through a pipeline of filters. Now, as you saw in my first demo, you don't need to even use the HTTP-based protocol filter class. Or you can use the base protocol filter class and have no filters like I did with cache, or you can insert one or as many filters as you want. Filters are reusable and self-contained code that you can use in your app to make your main app logic simple and straightforward. Some examples of these filters are like a 503 retry filter. You can have a 503 response returned back from the server, and your filter can intercept this response and send the request back out again, so that your app, your main app logic, always gets back the response that you know you're expecting. In our app's case, we always get back images. Another example is a metered network filter. And you can use the cache feature that I talked about when dealing with metered networks. For instance, your customer may be roaming. You don't want to charge them over a roaming network. So you can pull images straight from the cache. We have both of these filters, the 503 retry filter and the metered network filter, in our HTTP client sample. And I recommend you guys check them out to learn about how to use filters in your app. We're really excited to see what are the great new things you guys will do with filters. Later on in this talk, to really kind of demonstrate the power of HTTP filters, we will use this concept again to authenticate. Now, just to wrap up HTTP client, this is a great new API that you can use, and it's consistent across the board. Doesn't matter whether you're building an app in XAML or HTTP client. Doesn't matter if you're building the app in XAML or JavaScript. You have one API to access cache, cookies, and credentials that you're using in various components in your app. This API finally gives you access to strongly typed headers, and that's a lot less codes because that's a lot less string parsing. You have APIs to list and retrieve and manipulate cookies. I talked to you about about cache, and now your app has a cache with APIs to read and write content to this cache. And finally, we just talked about filters, a powerful new functionality in Windows Runtime. You can use this to call self-contained modular code in your app to simplify your app logic. So we'll use these filters, like I mentioned, to get authenticated. Now, getting authenticated is the very next step to personalize your app for customers. And it isn't always easy, like Matt mentioned. It's hard for you. This workflow contains all the steps you need to take to get authenticated with a service that uses OAuth 1A. It looks tough, and it is. You've got to worry about nonce, signatures, secret keys, and whatnot. And usually, you're actually abstracting away from this code by calling a library. And that's exactly what we'll show to you by using HTTP filters. But it's not just tough for you. It's tough for your customers. Users don't expect to see this screen anymore. They expect to only have to enter their username and password once. And this problem is made even worse when they have to enter these credentials on a touchscreen device across apps, across devices, a very common scenario your customers face. And so I'll show to you all the technology that Windows 8.1 has built to deliver on this one username and password promise. Users expect to only have to enter their credentials once in these smart OSs and these smart devices. So let's take a look at what we can do to deliver on this promise of one username and password, and how we can use filters to get authenticated easily. Let's jump into Visual Studio. Awesome. So I want to favorite pictures, as the button suggests. And to favorite pictures, I need to be able to get authenticated. So we'll use filters for that. Let's actually add the filter to our project. And this is a filter that takes care of OAuth 1A. And don't forget to add the reference to your project so that you can actually use it. And now, like I mentioned before, for any filter, you need to call the HTTP-based protocol filter class. Then we will actually call our OAuth filter, and pass in the parameters like client ID or the secret key. And we'll actually pass in the base protocol filter object as well so that we can insert this filter into the filter pipeline. We'll use this auth filter and pass it into our HTTP client. You saw me do that with the caching demo as well. And then finally, we will send out our request. Notice, I'm not calling any of the auth code in here, in my app logic over here. The auth code is actually all being handled in my filter. And this keeps my main logic very clean and simple. So let's run this app and take a look. So just like before, let's give it a minute. So just like before, we've got images coming up. And let's pick an image that we want to favorite. How about this one? Energy is of 100,000 suns. Wow, that's one heck of a sunburn. Right-click and favorite this picture. And this is where the web authentication broker is coming up. And notice, my credentials were auto-populated. Web authentication broker in Windows 8.1 delivers on that promise of one username and password. We're doing the heavy lifting of getting these credentials, storing them in an encrypted way, and then auto-populating them in your apps when your customers use them. And notice, customers still have to click that sign-in button to authorize this app to use these credentials. So let's sign in and authorize the app. And that's it. That experience is exactly what our customers expect. One username, one password. As a developer, this is a whole lot easier for me, even when I'm testing my app, creating my app. I don't have to, each time I pull up Web Authentication Broker, I don't have to enter my credentials in again and again and again and again. They're being auto-populated by the system. Let's jump back into our slides, please. Thank you. So, in summary, users expect to only have to enter their username and password once. We are doing all the heavy lifting to get these credentials out and store them in an encrypted way. And we need your help to deliver on this promise. So if you're actually authenticating to a third-party service, use the web authentication broker. If you're authenticating to your own service, use Password Vault. Just like web authentication broker, we are roaming these credentials across apps, across devices. And finally, for easy access to Microsoft accounts, to once again abstract away from that authentication code, use Online ID when authenticating to a Microsoft account. And deliver on that promise of one username and password. So with this, we've hit the ground running in building a connected app. Matt's going to take back over again and talk to you guys about how we build and how to take this app to the next level. We're going to add push notifications to our app, and then we're going to talk about a pretty exciting new feature in Windows, which is keeping your apps fresh before your customers even launch them. Thanks. Matt?
All right, thanks, Suhail. I think most of you guys saw this slide. We have a great offering with Azure Mobile Services, and this is the GA pricing. And I'm not going to talk to you a lot about the pricing. There's just a couple points that I want to point out here before we actually get into using an Azure Mobile Service within our application. This lets you get started for free. You can start developing your app for free with this. You can do some beta testing on this. And then the second point I'm going to make is you can scale this as your app scales. As your app gains popularity, as it gains downloads, very simple to go into the management portal. You saw that in the keynote. Scale out your service and grow it as your app grows in popularity. Now, these services are great. You can do a lot with these services. But the thing that I really want to zero in on is adding push notifications to your app. This makes your app, you know, dynamic and engaging. We're going to see here in just a minute adding a live tile to this application so that we can, you know, alert users that there's some new photos available for them to see. Since we're pulling these photos in from Flickr, they could be changed at any time, or we could have new ones. So let's jump into Visual Studio, and I'm going to walk you through adding push notifications to your app. You guys saw a bunch of this in both of the keynotes and how easy it is to get started with push notifications, but I wanted to go into just a little bit more detail with you on stage here. We saw that it's as simple as right-clicking on our project, choosing Add, and selecting Push Notifications. That's going to bring up a pretty simple workflow that's going to walk us through the process of getting a service for our application. And I'm actually going to create a new one for you. The first thing that it's going to ask us to do, though, is to sign into the Windows Store. And it's doing this so that it knows which application to associate the Push Notifications account with. So let me just enter my password here, and I'll sign in. And once we're in the store, or once we've entered our password and we're authenticated with the store, we have the option of selecting an application, or we've made it really, really simple for you in 8.1 to just reserve a new application name right here. You don't actually have to go into the store portal to do the reservation anymore. I've got an app name that I kind of like. It's called Supernova Experience, so I'm going to select that, and we'll use this for the demo. So I'll click Next. And the next thing that you see is the option to select a service. This is where it's actually connecting to my Azure Mobile Service account and showing me the services that I have. And I can choose one of these or I can create a new one. And I think some of the demos that you saw was using a service that's already existing. So let me just go ahead and show you how simple it is to create a brand new service for your app, and we'll use that for push. Click Create Service and just choose a name. We are in the 090 build talk. I think that's a reasonable service name. The region, we're on the West Coast right now. I'm just going to go ahead and create a new database for this service. I'll give it a database username, and you can give it a password. Make sure I enter the password the same time twice. There we go. And click Create. Now, what's going on in the background while this dialog box is running is Azure Mobile Services is provisioning everything for you. You don't have to go to the store portal and try to copy secret key, you know, client secrets around and have copy-paste errors or have an extra space at the end of the client secret and that doesn't work and it's very difficult to debug. The manual steps in this are gone. This is setting everything up. It's getting the client secret. It's getting the package SID. It's connecting your service with your application. It's making sure your service knows how to call WNS. It's getting all of your tables set up with your table users. And these are all manual steps that you had to do in the past that we've made as simple as just one dialog box flow. So there we go. The service is created, and it's ready for us to use. I'll go ahead and select that service we just created and click Next. And the final screen is just a sort of heads up as to the changes that's going to get made to your project when you finish this flow. The changes are really, really simple. You're going to get a dependency on the Azure Mobile Services SDK added to your project. And you're going to get just a little bit of code added to your project that will show you, or that will basically connect your app with that service. And of course, you saw the default toast experience that we have when you press F5. I'll show you that in just a second. But before we get there, it's probably really hard to see in the back, but app.xaml.cs has changed. So let's head over to that file really quick, and I'll show you what got added. And you can see us creating a new mobile service client here. This is code that was added to your project automatically for you. And then you can come down here and you can also see, didn't quite go down far enough, or I went down too far, sorry. The client was created right here. So I'll go ahead and run this service, or run our application, and we have a build failure. That is excellent. I picked a really bad service name. Let's try that one more time. I should have known better than to start with a zero. So it's okay to go ahead and walk through this one more time. So I'll go ahead and sign in one more time real quick. We can select the same, we'll select the same application. I'll pick a service this time that's not going to be so cluttered up. I'll click Next. I'll click Finish. And we'll see if we can quickly remove that old service. That we will delete that. All right, let's see if that works. Nope, that didn't work. This is the stuff that you don't want to have to debug on stage. let me go ahead and load a project that already has the service connected to it. and we will pick up from there. So let me go over here. I'll drop this in. Sorry about that, guys. I should have known better than that. So I'll go ahead and run this, and what we will see is we should not see the toast notification, because no, I don't think it's read-only. It should be fine. Let me uninstall the app really quick. Boy, that sucks. I'll head back over to Visual Studio, build, clean, redeploy, and you should work. There we go. Sorry about that. Whew, it actually worked. So what we didn't see here is we don't actually see the toast notification come up, and that's fine. It's because I had changed the service since we started kind of in a midpoint to use a live tile notification. And I'm going to go back to Visual Studio really quick. We'll stop this guy and show you what that actually looks like in Server Explorer. So in the keynote demo, you saw Server Explorer, and I think you saw a little bit of that in today's demo as well. In the day two keynote. Basically what this allows you to do is it allows you to drill in to your service and edit your service-side scripts right within Visual Studio. Now these are the scripts that actually run on your service. This isn't running on localhost or anything like that. And so you can see this is the insert script. If we come down here, I made a really quick change to this. This used to be send toast text 01. All you need to do is change it to the type of push notification that you want. And so we changed this to send tile square text 02. I added an extra line of text. And it's as simple as that to add push notifications to your project using Azure Mobile Services. So can we flip back to the slides real quick? A lot of this was also covered today, so I'm not going to go into super deep detail other than to just point out a couple of things. Azure Mobile Services offers data in the cloud. It's the same data offering that you have with Azure. There's tables, there's SQL, and there's unstructured storage as well, blob storage. And we're going to see blob storage in just a second. Another really, really interesting offering that we have with AMS is the ability to authenticate to third-party services. And we provide you a stable API surface to do that. So you can authenticate to services like Twitter and Facebook and Google, and of course, the MSA service. And even if Twitter, you know, changes their authentication scheme tomorrow, that's fine, because we have a stable API surface. Your service will be protected from that. And then finally, I screwed up the push notification demo, but you would have seen you would have seen a couple different types of push notifications. You would have seen a toast notification, and you would have seen a tile notification. But that isn't the end of what we support. We, of course, support push notifications to Windows Phone devices, and we also support push to iOS and Android as well. We also have a really great offering that allows you to broadcast notifications, and you saw that in the keynote this morning, which basically lets you send notifications to many, many users at one time. Simple, it's really straightforward. We support server-side logic. You can add custom APIs. You can add scheduled tasks. And I'm going to show you scheduled tasks in just a minute when we talk about that last problem that I want to get to. And that last problem is keeping your apps fresh and up to date. Now, how many of you folks have seen something like this before? We know that as apps get more and more connected to services, they need more and more data. And usually what happens is when you start the app is going to try to get that data as soon as you start it, which leads to a kind of poor experience like this, especially when your users don't have great networks. Service applications are trying to fetch data, and it takes a while. So we realize that this is a problem, and this is a common problem to all service-connected applications. So I'm happy to introduce a new feature in Windows 8.1, Fresh Apps, and it's all about keeping your apps up to date. What it allows you to do is indicate to the operating system the content that you would like prefetched for your application. And we will go get that content for you before your app runs. And it will be available to you in that same great cache that Suhail was talking about. And it's really straightforward. There's a couple ways that you can indicate content, and we're going to go through those in just a minute. You'll indicate that content. We have a couple APIs. And then before your app runs, we've built some great heuristics into the operating system that will tell us an appropriate time to prefetch. And then that content's going to be present when you run the app. So let's get into a couple, let's get into the APIs and talk about how we can actually do this prefetching. How can you indicate that content to the operating system? So the very first way, and probably one of the simplest ways, is just specify the content locally. It's as simple as populating an array of content URIs and calling a simple API. And this is great for applications that use, you know, pretty static URIs. If you have an application that users have subscribed to a particular section, and when the app starts, the first thing that you do is, you know, request that section URI, and that section URI is rather stable, this is a great option. Or if the first thing that you do is you make a request to, you know, download maybe the high scores for the user, and that's the first thing you do when you start the app, that's kind of great content to indicate for prefetch. That's not the only way you can indicate content, though. There's actually a second way, and that's to specify content using a service. And what you do, or what happens here, is your service creates an XML file that contains the content that you would like prefetched. And then you point the OS to that XML file. And your service can keep this XML file as up to date as you want. And this is wonderful for applications that have, you know, highly dynamic content, like a news app, for example. News articles and images and, you know, the sort of key story, that stuff is changing every couple hours. You can have a service that's sitting there in the cloud that's generating the prefetch XML that matches that story change. And when we go to prefetch content for your applications, we'll download that XML and prefetch that stuff that you're telling us. And that's going to be the latest and greatest content for your app. Now, before I actually get into showing you what this looks like, and we'll be able to use that Flickr app that we've been building to actually demonstrate this, before I get into showing you that, there's one more thing that I want to do. And that's talk to you about when we actually do this prefetching. Now, we all have to deliver on the promise of a great battery life and a great performance experience for our users. And this is extremely important on mobile devices like tablets, especially on RT devices. So there's some conditions that have to be met before we will actually prefetch. And the first is really system conditions. We need to make sure that we have enough battery. We need to make sure that there's enough available network. We got to make sure that there's enough CPU so that when we do this prefetching operation, we're not impacting the user's experience using the device. The second thing is app usage. We will only prefetch for applications the user actually uses. We know what apps the user uses, and we know when the user typically uses those apps. And we take that information and we make smart decisions about what to prefetch and when to prefetch for it. And then the third thing is the prior benefit of these prefetch operations. We'll be prefetching for your applications, and we have a way to measure how much that prefetch operation improved the user experience. And we're going to prioritize apps that do a really good job of indicating content to prefetch over applications that, you know, maybe don't do a good job indicating content for prefetch. So with that said, let's head back to Visual Studio and see if I have any more luck. And we're going to see how that prefetching works. Now, we have an app. It pulls images from Flickr. And as I had mentioned before, those images could be changing. Right, NASA could upload, you know, a bunch of new images that Chandra took yesterday, or users could be, or other people could be uploading images. So it would be really great if we could get our application to, you know, indicate to the operating system, please prefetch those new images for me, so that when the app starts, we have a great experience and the user's not waiting for us to download those images. We also have an Azure Mobile Service. So it should be pretty straightforward to go into Azure Mobile Services and demonstrate how to use that service to generate that XML file that will indicate, hey, these are the new images that we have on Flickr. Please prefetch these. So I'm going to head back to Server Explorer really quick. And we'll pick this one. And I'll choose Browse to Portal. And what this will do is this will take us into the Azure Mobile Services portal. We'll come in here. And I had mentioned scheduled tasks before. What would be great is if every, 15 minutes or half hour or hour, we ping the Flickr service, we get that list of images that the app would show, and generate the prefetch XML off of that. So I'll go ahead and create a scheduled task. And it's as simple as creating a new scheduled job. And I'm going to call it generate prefetch XML. And running it every 15 minutes for right now sounds reasonable. And I'll just go ahead and click Create. Now, this is going to create that scheduled task, and it's going to associate a script with it that we'll be able to edit in just a minute. An important note here is this starts off disabled so that you can test the script. We don't want the script, running every 15 minutes or every minute while we're actually building this. So I'll drill into this. And I'll select script, and it just gives you an empty script that basically logs something to the Azure Mobile Services portal's console that says, hey, you have an empty script. Please go and update this script. That's fine, but not what we want. So I'm going to drop a little bit of code in here. My little bit of code is in a file, so let me go ahead and go over and open up that file real quick. It is in my backup folder. I'm going to select this, copy it. I'll take this back over to my portal, and I'm going to paste this code in. Now, it looks like a lot of code, but it's actually pretty straightforward. I'm not going to walk through all of it, but I'll give you an idea of what it's doing. It's using blob storage to write an XML blob to my Azure Mobile Services. And it's making a request to pretty much the same URI, the same URL that the app does to get the images. And then all it does is parse up that request, it finds the images that it wants, and it goes ahead and generates that prefetch XML. So I'll go ahead and run this once to test it, and this is a great feature. It allows you to just run it one time, and you can go and check to see what the output of this was. So I'll go ahead and run this once, and once the thing is completed, you saw that there was a couple console calls in here. So we can head back over. I'll show you where the log is in Azure Mobile Services portal, and we can check to see and make sure that we successfully created that prefetch blob. So that prefetch blob is now sitting in our Azure Mobile Services storage. And we can look at what that looks like by clicking on the storage tab in here and drilling into our storage account. So we put this in a container. I called the container prefetch. That was part of that code that I just dropped in. So when we go into that container, we'll actually be able to see the prefetch XML file that we created. And just to give you an idea of what that looks like, I can copy this to the clipboard, and we can navigate to it. And it's really straightforward. This is not complicated XML at all. Basically, it's a list of the images that we would like to get prefetched. So I'll head back over to Visual Studio, and there's one more change that we need to make to Visual Studio in order to get Visual Studio prefetching for this. And that's, we'll head back to the app.xaml.cs file and come down here where we have our Azure Mobile Services. And we're going to add a line of code to call into the windows.networking.backgroundtransferContentPrefetcher class. We're calling into the Content Prefetcher class. We're setting one of those indirect content URIs, which basically is the, hey, we're going to point you to an XML blob. And then we're going to provide the URI of that blob storage that we just looked at in visual, or that we just looked at in the portal. I'll go ahead and run the application again. And that app is now enabled for prefetching. The operating system will periodically go pull that XML file, and it will grab the images that are indicated in that XML file. Now, we've been using this app on stage, so everything is pretty well loaded. Suhail talked about the great cache that we have, so this cache is pretty hot. What I'd like to do is kind of just give you an example of what prefetching looks like when this content really is changing, and we're not going to wait around for a bunch of new images to get uploaded. So I'm going to go back to Visual Studio, and there's a couple things that I'm going to want to do. What I want to show you is the application when it is not prefetched and the experience that users get versus what's possible when we do prefetch for the application. Now, I'm plugged into a wired connection, and I've already had a lot of demo gremlins, but I'm going to go ahead and try to join a wireless network just to give you a feel for prefetching on a network that is more typical for users. It's not going to be the fastest network on Earth, and it's going to be a little bit more typical. So let's see real quick if I can join the wireless network. If I can't, that's okay. We'll just go ahead and use the wired connection again. So I'll connect to the build network. Everybody knows how well this network's been doing, so we'll see if this actually works or not. And give this just a minute. And if we don't get connected, that's going to be okay. We'll go back to the wired connection. So it looks like we're connected. That's great. Before I show you the comparison of prefetch versus no prefetch, I'm going to want to clear the internet cache. So I'm just going to run a really quick script here. All it's doing is making sure that the app is closed, and it's clearing the cache. And so now we have a clean slate, and we're going to be able to have a fair comparison between the no prefetch case and the prefetch case. So let's head back to our app, go ahead and run our application, and see if we're actually connected. And we are. We're connected. The images are coming in, and they're kind of coming in a little bit slowly. And this experience is pretty typical, especially in applications that use a lot of content. You start it, it's kind of a chunky experience. You either see a spinner progress bar for a while before this content's populated, or you get that kind of chunky thing. It's not the best user experience. I'm going to head back. I'll go ahead and clear the cache again so that we have a fair comparison between the prefetch and non-prefetch case. And I'm going to force a prefetch operation to occur. Now, as I had mentioned, normally this is going to happen automatically. The OS has got a bunch of smarts built into it to know when to prefetch for the app. But rather than have you guys sit around and wait for a couple hours, or an hour, or 15 minutes, or whatever it takes for the OS to decide to prefetch, I'll kick it off manually. And we have APIs to do that. We'll talk about that in just a sec. Head back to Visual Studio. I'll go ahead and start the application. And there we go. We have all the images. They're all present. And that's the sort of experience that we really want for our users. That's prefetching. So can we kick back to the slide deck real quick? So a couple points to make on this feature. This works with the winjs.xhr requests that if you're writing HTML apps, you're very familiar with that. You're using it today. You don't really need to make any changes. This works with those. And this also works with the new HTTP client APIs that Suhail was talking about at the very beginning of this talk. And that's because it's powered off of that cache that we give you for free as app developers. When you think about what content you want prefetched, you should make sure that you're prefetching the first content that the user is going to see. Now, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but the Bing applications are leveraging this feature in the builds that you guys have today on the 8.1 builds. And during the day 2 keynote, I was just doing some ad hoc testing, stopwatch testing, starting the Bing News app, seeing how fast it loaded, prefetching for it, seeing how fast it loaded. And when we were able to prefetch for the Bing News app, it showed that first page, the first page with the first set of images about twice as fast. It got users to the content twice as fast when we're able to prefetch. And that's because they're making really good decisions about what to go and get, what to go and prefetch. You should also make sure that you're prefetching content that has, a reasonable lifetime for your application. Don't ask us to go get a, JSON file that will expire immediately. Or don't ask us to go get a JSON file that expires in a few seconds or a couple of minutes. We're going to be good with prefetching, but we're not going to get it dialed in to, within 2 minutes before your app starts. So make sure that you're giving us content that is likely to still be valid when your application runs again. We support cookie-based authentication, and we don't do any prefetching on metered networks. And again, this kind of goes back to that user promise of making sure that we're, making great use of a user's resources We don't want them paying additional money for these prefetch operations. When you're going through this and you know you're testing this with your applications and trying to figure out what's going on, we have events in the Windows Event Viewer so you can see what that background activity is that we're doing on behalf of your application. So you can go find those events in the Event Viewer. And as you saw, I had a tool that automatically kicked off the prefetch operation for testing and obviously demo purposes. We have APIs for you to use to manually start that prefetch operation. So we couldn't really cover, you know, everything in an hour talk. And one of the kind of key next problems that you know, you're going to face writing these service-connected apps is making sure your apps work really well in poor network conditions, kind of you know what we have here with our wireless network. We got to make sure that they work well online and offline. And you got to make sure that they work well on metered connections. We have a new simulator in Visual Studio that we've added in 8.1 to help you simulate these sorts of network operations to make sure that your apps work well across those network transitions. We also have APIs in the windows.networking.connectivity namespace for you to use to tell what conditions your app is currently running in. It'll tell you if you're online or offline, if you have internet connection or not. Suhail talked about the new HTTP client that we have in Windows Runtime, and he also mentioned, you know, filters, extremely powerful concept, and that we have sample filters for you. Our HTTP client sample covers more than just filters, but you can take a look at that sample and see some of the interesting problems that we're solving using filters in those samples, and you can take those filters and use them within your applications if you want as well. So certainly go check out the new, you know, HTTP client, the new HTTP samples. Peter Smith is in the audience. He's giving a great talk tomorrow morning that's going to go into tons of detail on that HTTP client. So if you're interested in hearing more about that, certainly check out Peter's talk, and I'll have it up on the slide afterwards. Suhail also touched on authentication and the problems that developers and users have with that. We have the tools in the operating system to deliver on that one username, you know, enter your username and password once promise, so that users don't have to continually enter passwords on touch devices and across all the devices that they have. Karenbeer, again, is also in the audience, I think. I saw him wandering around earlier. He's giving a great talk tomorrow morning at 10:30. That's going to walk you through how to think about authentication in your connected apps and which of our technologies that we have available to you you should use when you're authenticating in your applications. And you've probably caught a little bit about this, but you know, sometimes it's not enough just to you know, make RESTful calls or get data from a service and bring it into your app. Sometimes you're going to want to display rich web content right within your application, and we have a web view that lets you do that now. It's available to both HTML and XAML developers, and it works great with touch. It works great with our overlays and our UI model. So you guys should definitely check that out. We have a couple talks that are happening at Build that cover that as well. So with that, I'd like to close. We're going to end a couple minutes early. That's so Suhail and I can be up here and take questions. You guys are welcome to come up here and ask us any questions. I'm going to leave the resources slide up here. These are some of the talks, you know, Peter's HTTP talk, the authentication talk. There's a bunch of great talks on Azure Mobile Services. You guys have been hearing about this throughout the conference. You'll hear more about this going forward. A bunch of wonderful talks that are coming up. And then, of course, you know, the WebView talks as well that I mentioned. So with that, I'd like to close. Thank you guys for your time. I know that we're the last thing in, you know, in the afternoon. Guys, enjoy the party tonight. Thanks for joining us online, if you're watching online. And have a good night.